Chapter 41, Berber Chan. The Lama led his guests to the other side of the monastery grounds, and the place where the Gongkang and the Lakang stood, one the temple of the angry gods, and the other the temple of the kindly gods. And scurrying from wall to wall, Gravelbeard, Nettlebrand's spy, came after them. As they were passing the Red Temple, the Lama stopped. Vita Greenbloom had joined her husband. "This," she said, translating what the Lama said, "is the temple of the angry gods, who are said to keep all evil from the monastery and the village."
What sort of evil?" asked Sorrel, looking around uneasily.
"Evil spirits and snowstorms, avalanches, rockfalls, disease."
"Starvation?" asked Sorrel.
"Starvation too."
A strange shivery feeling came over Gravelbeard. Weak at the knees, he stole past the red walls. His breath was coming faster, and he felt as if hands were reaching out to him from the temple, hands ready to seize him and drag him into the darkness. Involuntarily, he leaped forward with a little shriek, and almost collided with Barnabas Greenbloom's heels.
"What was that?" asked the professor, turning around. "Did you hear it, Vita?" His wife nodded. "Sounded as if you stepped on some poor cat's tail, Barnabas."
Professor shook his head and looked around again. But by now, Gravelbeard had hidden in a crevice in the wall.
"Perhaps it was the evil spirits," said Guinevere.
"Very likely," said her father. "Come on, I think the Lama's reached our destination." The old monk had stopped where the slope of the mountain met the monastery walls. The rock here was full of holes like a Swiss cheese. Ben and Sorrel tilted their heads back. Yes, there were gaps everywhere in the rock, all of them large enough for either the boy or the brownie to fit into comfortably.
"What's that?"
asked Ben, looking inquiringly at the Lama. Twigleg interpreted for him.
"The Lama says, these are dwellings, the dwellings of those from whom you are about to seek help. They do not often show themselves. Very few of us have ever seen them face to face. But they are said to be friendly beings, and they were here long, long before we came."
The Lama went up to the rock wall, taking Ben with him. Ben hadn't noticed them earlier, but he now saw the heads of two stone dragons jutting out from the rock.
"They look like Fire Drake," whispered Ben. "Just like Fire Drake."
He felt the dragon's warm breath on his back.
"They are the dragon of the beginning and the dragon of the end. For what you have in mind, you should choose the dragon of the beginning."
Ben nodded.
"Go on, Dragon Rider.
Hit it."
Raising the moonstone, Ben brought it down with all his might on the horns of the stone dragon. The moonstone smashed into a myriad of splinters, and all they heard was a deep rumble slowly dying away in the heart of the mountain. Then all was still, very still. They waited. As the sun slowly rose behind the mountains, they cast their shadows on the monastery. A cold wind was blowing from the snowy peaks as a figure suddenly appeared in one of the holes in the rock, high above the heads of those waiting below. It was a brownie. He almost looked like Sorrel, except that his coat was paler and thicker, and he had four arms. He was resting his paws on the rock where he stood.
20 fingers, Twigleg," whispered Ben. "He has 20 fingers, just as the genie said."
The homunculus could only nod. The strange brownie looked down suspiciously, inspected the humans briefly, and then stared long and hard at the dragon.
"Fancy that!"
he cried in the language of fabulous creatures, which can be understood at once by any other living creature, human or animal.
"Thought better of it after all, have you? After so many years? I thought y'all molded away in your hiding place by now."
The strange brownie spat scornfully on the rock.
"So, what's happened for them to send you here all of a sudden to ask us for help? What kind of weird brownie is that you have with you? What's he done with his other arms?"
"They've only got two arms," snapped Sorrel, looking up at him.
"Which is quite enough for any self-respecting brownie, you pathetic puffball. And no one sent us." We came of our own free will. The other dragons didn't dare come, but they haven't moldered away.
Whoa! Said the strange brownie, grinning. Pathetic puffball, hey? At least you know your mushrooms.
Mine's Barbachan. What's yours?
She's Sorrel, replied Firedrake, taking a step forward. And you're right about one thing. We're here because we need help. We've come a long, long way to find the Rim of Heaven, and a genie told us you could guide us there.
Long, long way? Barbachan wrinkled his furry brow. What do you mean by that?
We mean that we've flown halfway around the world just to listen to your smart-alecky remarks.
Calm down, Sorrel, said Firedrake, nudging her aside with his nose. Then he looked up at Barbachan again. We come from a valley far away to the northwest, a place where my kind went many hundreds of years ago when human beings were beginning to take over the world. Now they're reaching out their greedy hands to steal our valley too, and we must find a new home. So I set out to seek the Rim of Heaven, the home of all dragons. I am here to ask if you know it.
Of course I know it, replied Barbachan. I know it as well as I know my own fur, although it's been a long time since I was last there.
Ben held his breath.
Then it exists?
Cried Sorrel.
The Rim of Heaven really exists? What do you think?
Barbachan wrinkled his nose and looked distrustfully at Firedrake. Are you sure you didn't come from the Rim of Heaven yourself? Are there really other dragons in the world?
Firedrake nodded. Will you guide us? He asked. Will you show us where to find the Rim of Heaven? For a few long moments, the four-armed brownie did not answer. Sighing, he sat down in the hole in the rock where he had appeared and dangled his legs.